Ladies and gentlemen, the award for best performance as a coffee in a morning goes to Sparkplug Coffee. This is Sparkplug's 9th win. They've been making outstanding coffee of the highest standards since 2013. Sparkplug starts with premium Arabica beans that have been directly sourced and fairly traded. They offer blends and roasts to suit any taste, including decaf and half-calf. But the best part is that they deliver this exceptional coffee to you in Canada or the US within just a week of custom roasting it here in Toronto, so that it always reaches you fresh and at its peak flavor, and you will taste the difference. You can order Sparkplug as you need it, or join the Sparkplug Autopilot Coffee Club. The Autopilot Coffee Club is not a coffee of the month club. It's completely personalized and flexible, comes with all kinds of member benefits. And if you use the promo code TOP100PROJECT at checkout, and that's all one word with the number 100, Sparkplug is offering 20% off your next coffee order. That applies to any size order, and you don't need to be a new customer to take advantage of it. So what are you waiting for? It's time for your favorite cup of coffee to start coming from your own kitchen. Plug yourself in at sparkplugcoffee.com.
Get off the stage. You're boring.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
Welcome to the 434th Ellis's Analysis, and thank you to all our cinema-loving chums for checking out our latest chit-chat about movies. Normally, we spend about 45 minutes to an hour breaking down the goods and not-so-goods about classic films. Today, we're changing it up and, as you already guessed by the title of the episode, talking about the 94th Academy Awards in our 7th annual Oscars Preview Podcast. We'll discuss all 10 nominees for Best Picture, and we'll also dig into the 5 picks for Best Director, everybody in the 4 acting categories, all 20 of them, and all the nominees in the 2 writing categories. We'll also talk a bit about the other awards and other people who have major nominations in those categories. We'll address the foot-shooting incident by the Oscars head honchos, or is it ABC? Might be ABC. And we'll talk about some of our faves of 2021. Some will come up during the Oscars section. Not a lot, though, necessarily. I'm the lover of pizza that doesn't taste like licorice. He used to drive his car in the alleys of the west side of Toronto, but then we moved. King Ryan Ellis. And Dune, if this nightmare across from me isn't the powerful, dog-loving child of not-deaf adults, who doesn't often look up and has never been to Belfast... My wife, Bev.
That's me.
Just like last year, maybe the year before that, I got all the nominees in there in one way or another. Every single one was mentioned. All 10 this year. This was not a good time to start doing that. Not a great year for film. And these nominees, many of them are not worthy of this. Okay. Before we go further, we should mention that we begin our 9th year of podcasting in 4 days on March 25th. That's later this week. Obviously, 4 days.
We begin our 10th year. We celebrate our 9th anniversary.
Well, 2013 to 14. To 15, to 16, to 17, to 18, to 19, to 20, 21, 22. That is 10 years.
Just quietly waiting for you to prove me right.
I did the exact same thing earlier with the fingers, and I had it wrong. I've proven with Chris many times on scoring at the movies, I can't do math anymore. I was good at it in school. I'm not anymore.
It lines up with our wedding anniversary, because we got married just 2 months after we started the podcast.
And thanks to all you out there in audience land, of course, for listening to us, whether it be one episode or all 434. Okay, the coming attractions opinion question for the Oscars. What do you want to see win Best Picture? This has become a tradition the last couple of years as the opinion question. What's your choice?
Well, in the interest of not wasting any time and making everybody mad at me right away, my choice is Don't Look Up.
Wow, that's pretty polarizing.
Oh, it sure is. What's your choice?
I never thought I'd say this 4 or 5 months ago, before most of these movies even came out. We've only seen a lot of the nominees in the past week or so as well. We'll talk about that soon. But West Side Story. I'm not a big fan of the original, as I said when we did that podcast many years ago, but I really enjoyed Spielberg's take on this. I think all the actors are as good, in most cases better, than the original cast. And I was pretty invested and involved in a movie where I knew it was going to go, and I didn't love the original. I think it's better than the original, this one is. I was a thumbs down on 3 other Best Picture nominees, and I wasn't exactly raving about 2 or 3 others. I think we basically agree on all these, by the way. Dune was a marvel to look at, although the sound in the IMAX room where we were was so loud, I couldn't really hear properly. That's their fault.
Yeah, you have to just
not Dune's fault.
Stop blaming the movie for that.
It didn't help, though.
The sound mix was one of the best things about that movie. Unfortunately, Eglinton Town Center is not the best movie theater, but it is the closest one to where we live now, which maybe sounded great to the 20-somethings in that audience, and we just have old ears. Then I think the sound design is one of the best things about that movie.
Okay. Coda was touching, one of the nominees for Best Picture, and I really liked Nightmare Alley, which we only saw 2 days ago. But otherwise, I just don't think this batch of nominees was good at all. And a lot of people I follow online, whether it be Twitter, YouTube shows, they love some of these films. We do not agree. Okay. So what we'll do is we'll talk about Best Picture first, then the director, then Best Actress, then Best Actor, then Supporting Actress, then Supporting Actor, then the other categories, and we'll talk about our favorites. So of these 10 nominees for Best Picture, we'll go alphabetical. Belfast with 7 nominations. Coda with 3. Don't Look Up has 4. Drive My Car has 4. Dune has 10, the second most. King Richard has 6 nominations. Licorice Pizza with 3. Nightmare Alley has 4. The Power of the Dog has 12. That's the most of any movie and among the most ever, somewhere on the short list of the most ever. And West Side Story has 7. The Power of the Dog's nominations include 4 for acting. Only Belfast and King Richard even had 2 nominations for acting in the Best Picture category, being the Ricardos had 3, but it's not a Best Picture nominee. Belfast, 7 nominations. I'm calling this the triple threat, picture, director, screenplay. Quite a few movies had that. That's all Licorice Pizza had, by the way, picture, director, screenplay. But also nominations for Chirin, I think is how you say his name, Hines, Judi Dench, The Sound, the song Down to Joy by Van Morrison. A lot of superstars, by the way, were nominated for Best Song this year. You don't have to like Van Morrison, but he is a great musician, always has been. I'm not a fan of the Hines and Dench nominations. Not that they're not good in the movie, but their co-stars are better than they are. Katrina Balfe, as the mother, is better than Dench is, and Dench has been nominated so many times. And Hines is good. He's been good for a long time. But Jamie Dornan, believe it or not, is better than he is. He's quite good as the father. But we didn't like this movie very much. So go ahead.
Okay, so it's like a child's eye view of the beginning of the Troubles in Ireland. And finally answering the question of what it would feel like to be adjacent to all that suffering. The Catholics are getting their homes firebombed, but what about their Protestant neighbors who felt vaguely bad about the whole thing? It's really beautiful to look at, has a lot of striking images. Beautiful enough to convince the Academy that this is actually a good film, and really, it's just fine. We got a lot of mileage out of making fun of it after, so I guess it was worth the rental price. There was all these lovely pieces, but they never coalesced into a story or a film that I cared about, and it felt like a lot more style than substance.
It's based on Brenna's actual life. The biggest problem, and I'd be surprised if this was true back in the late 60s, early 70s, for anyone. Maybe it was true for him, I don't know.
I don't want to leave Belfast. I'm the real boss of this house. I'm, what, 10 years old? I get to tell you what we're going to do. Okay, Junior.
Do we actually see him bossing his parents around? He's the main character of the film, so he's the one we hear griping about it to his grandparents.
If they weren't listening to him, they would leave, especially when their lives are in danger.
It doesn't really make Belfast look like a nice enough place to want to stay so
right.
bad. Even in the sense that you know all your neighbors, everybody's in each other's business, and it's really oppressive, and nothing ever changes, and not the kind of place you would necessarily be dying to stay. And this is a place where you have violence, you have so much conflict, you made me laugh so hard. If we go to London, will we be able to bring our outdoor toilet?
Right. They're fighting for an outdoor toilet.
Oh no, will they have indoor plumbing where we're going? Go, get out of here. You're just not making a case for it.
That movie's not worthy of probably any of these nominations. Actually, maybe cinematography would have been worthy. It is black and white, by the way. Okay, Coda's next. 3 nominations only. I thought maybe he had more, but Best Picture, obviously, is one of those. Troy Kotsur for Best Supporting Actor. He's probably going to win. And the adapted screenplay by, and I just heard this last night, saw her on a YouTube video, Sean Hader, is how she pronounces her name. This is one of my favorites of these 10, and one of my favorites of the year. And even though I like the movie an awful lot, some of the other reviews we've had lately, it wouldn't have made my top 10, but it did. If it wins, I'll be very pleased for it. I liked the movie. I enjoyed it. I'll watch it again. What about you? Are you a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
I say this is near the bottom of my list. I really could have done with all that cloying girl with a dream stuff, because underneath those cliches is this really interesting bedrock of a family and the culture of the deaf. And it's handled pretty nicely with legitimately deaf actors, and the challenges of their life are handled matter-of-factly instead of being presented as this modeled in tragedy or something. But instead of chasing that thread, they gave us this really well-trod story of a kid with a talent so great it would be a crime to waste it, but her parents rely on her and they just don't understand. Kind of followed the same plot of many immigrant family stories, where you have a kid that grew up in America, parents speak a different language. It's literally that they speak a different language and she needs to interpret for them.
Mm-hmm.
The style, it never rises above adequate.
It's true.
It's like a polished episode of a TV show. And it doesn't help that it came out so shortly after The Sound of Metal, which I thought was such an exceptional film.
Right. That was released this year rather than last year, and it did win Oscars of its own last year.
It would win Best Picture this year.
Compared to these, it should. It would be my favorite of these 10 if it was one of them.
Yeah, big time.
I like it more than you. Okay, fine. So Don't Look Up. 4 nominations, obviously Best Picture, Original Screenplay, the editing, and the music score. And this is Adam McKay. I've never been his biggest fan when it comes to these kinds of films. The comedies, The Step Brothers, and The Talladega Nights, I enjoy those movies quite a bit, and I've certainly laughed at them. I appreciate what he's tried to do with Vice and The Big Short and now this, but I don't love when he does these movies. For one thing, I hate the way he uses his camera. I think it's probably better than it was in The Big Short. But it feels like you've got this great idea, Adam, and then you do one draft, maybe two, and that's good enough. But this movie is extraordinarily polarizing. I liked it fine. You seem to love it, though, so you go ahead.
Okay. I don't know anybody else who likes it as much as I do, for the record. I think it has something to do with the fact that I've been living with this increasing dread from watching the world ignore the fact that we're casually driving ourselves right off a cliff. And I don't think we're going to be saved, not to get too dark, but I think a mass extinction is inevitable at this point. It's already started. And as hard as it is to come to terms with that, it is made so much harder by the sheer merciless force of cognitive dissonance that has allowed us to allow it to happen. So in the rare occasion that art comes along that doesn't try to sugarcoat it, it just speaks directly to my grief and frustration. This movie was incredibly cathartic for me. So I forgive the messiness of it, because you're not wrong. The criticisms aren't wrong. In many ways, it's sloppily directed by somebody who's very in love with his own ideas and very in love with making people feel stupid. He's in the club of smart people who get it, and he just loves making fun of everybody else. But I forgive the messiness of it and that blunt instrument of his satire. Some people wouldn't even call it satire because they just hate this movie so much. I think a lot of the reason that people hate this movie so much, though, is because people are not ready to deal with the truth of what their eyes are telling them all around them. And I am grateful for art that just doesn't bullshit me. They're covering this subject matter with this cutthroat manner. People hate this. They hate Bo Burnham. They hate art that's really addressing how scary the world is right now, if you stop to think about it. But I wonder how it'll look in 10 or 20 years when we can see the comet, to beat the metaphor to death. But when the time comes when we can actually see the comet in the sky and it is no longer something we can deny, how will this film look?
The deniers aren't going to change. This is obviously a global warming parable.
And that's what I'm referring to when I say my dread.
Right. And I'm with you on that. Chris, scoring at the movies, Chris, one of my best friends, we've talked about this. He does not agree with us about the way the world's going, especially when it comes to the environment and global warming. We're deep pessimists and he's not. I'm glad that he feels differently because we don't all have to agree, but we really don't agree about that one. And I think the pandemic is what really proved it. If we can politicize that, we'll politicize everything.
We've been politicizing climate change for decades.
Right, but that's far more serious even than this pandemic has been. I just wish the movie had been, I don't know, maybe even make Streep dumber than she was as the president. He puts together this great cast, and they have pretty good roles. Jonah Hill's funny sometimes. Leo's pretty good, but it seems like it's a bit of a waste of his talents and various things. Jennifer Lawrence is pretty good, too. By the way, Kate Blanchett is one of many people that's in multiple nominees, which is not that hard anymore when 10 movies nominated.
Blanchett's also in Nightmare Alley, Chalamet's in Don't Look Up, and then Dune, Cooper's in Licorice Pizza, and the star of Nightmare Alley.
I love Dan Merle, one of my favorite people on YouTube. And he's one of the people that loves a lot of these movies and performances that I didn't, by the way. We really disagree this year. Not that he cares. But when he reviewed this movie, he kept talking about how it's a reference to the pandemic. And I thought, dude, it's global warming.
They started shooting it before the pandemic started.
I know. I was surprised he kept saying that.
Adam McKay talked about how the pandemic forced them to keep elevating the script and make it more crazy because the way people were acting about a pandemic necessitated it that they make this satire that much more extreme, because otherwise it wouldn't seem like anything compared to what was really going on in the world.
Okay. Drive My Car has 4 nominations. We just saw this a few weeks ago in the theater. And then, of course, it comes free on, where is it free? I think it's free somewhere. Maybe it's for Americans only, because we don't get HBO Max like they do in the States.
So anyway. You pay for HBO, but sometimes things come out on HBO Max that Canadians don't get.
Nightmare Alley, that's going to come up in a second as well. So again, the triple threat, picture, director, and the screenplay, also international feature, is probably going to win that. Those are the same 4 nominations Parasite won, by the way, a couple years ago. And this movie has been compared to Parasite, partly because it's a foreign language, maybe not juggernaut, but a bit of a favorite. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture. I guess it could win for the screenplay. And maybe it'll be like Parasite and surprise us all. It's a good movie, but it isn't finished. It is 3 hours long. And again, people will say, Roger Ebert would say it. No good movie is too long, no bad movie short enough. I do not agree. This is a good movie. It doesn't need to be 3 hours. Cut it down. Well, he's not going to now. It's done. But you know.
Yeah, of course. The first and the last acts are masterpieces. Yep. The best cinema I've seen this year. The first 45 minutes and the last 45 minutes of this movie. And there's a good middle in there, but it gets so bogged down with the whole subplot that they could cut, but also just like a half hour of play rehearsals. Mm. Maybe Chekhov heads really love this movie and wouldn't cut a single thing from it, but it's so bloated in the middle. It's such a shame because you're right. There is a masterpiece in there with just a little too much bloat in the middle.
Dune had 10 nominations for Best Picture, the adapted screenplay, the editing, the cinematography, the visual effects, the makeup, the sound, the music score, the art direction, set decoration, I always just call it the sets, and the costumes. It could win a bunch of those, really. It won't win Best Picture, I don't think. We've already discussed basically my problem with it, which is not the movie's fault, but I don't know what the hell I heard. When we watch it here at home in a few months, it won't be the same experience because it won't be on the same size screen, but at least my ears can understand what the hell is going on. It's also an unfinished movie like Drive My Cars, but for different reasons, because it literally is the first part. It's like Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, or even The Two Towers. There's still more to come, and we know there's more to come. It literally says part one in the opening title card. So a good movie, definitely 3 stars, but I bet I like it more when I see it again. Your thoughts?
I really liked Dune. I would put this in my top 3 of the year. I liked more than anything just the experience of watching it. It's so immersive. I don't think we saw a cooler looking film this year. We certainly saw movies that tried to look cool and didn't really hit the mark the way that this does. I'm not sure that it's good enough of a movie to justify taking on the insurmountable task of making a movie of Dune. I don't know why this has been such a white whale in Hollywood, especially when the heart of the story is something that's so out of fashion. You have an aristocrat who's the chosen one. It's this hero's journey. The hero is an overdog. And they're just so very, very earnest. In a year of incredible looking films, though, this is probably my favorite looking film. Even though you might say it's not as pretty as something like Belfast or West Side Story, but I think visually it had such a vision. And it really felt like it was doing something radical and fresh with the special effects. It created a world. It felt like it was a real step forward for science fiction special effects.
There should have been 10 nominations for the Best Cinematography this year, not for Best Picture.
What a looking year.
That's not even enough.
I'll say it over and over today. Beautifully shot films.
Okay, King Richard's next. We just saw this on Friday as we record this podcast. And by the way, a plug for Scoring at the Movies. We released this show on March 21st, and Chris and I covered King Richard for our 99th Scoring at the Movies episode last Thursday on St. Patrick's Day, the 17th. So if you want to hear more in-depth thoughts, a lot more in-depth thoughts that I have, go listen to that on Scoring at the Movies. So 6 nominations, Best Picture, Best Actor for Will Smith, he's probably going to win, Best Supporting Actress for Anjanou Ellis, got to root for her just for that name alone, the original screenplay, really, the editing, and Beyoncé's song. I mentioned star power, her song Be Alive, which is a good song. If it wins, I'll be okay with that. This movie's fresh for us, as was Belfast, as is Nightmare Alley, Drive My Cars not that long ago, Licorice Pizza we just saw recently too. It's not like this is terrible filmmaking, but it isn't really worthy of almost any of these. Maybe the song. Will Smith winning is more of a career achievement award, but basically, none of the three of us like this movie very much. And this is something I'm going to say a few times in this podcast tonight. I think the central premise is flawed. The movie's called King Richard. You go in knowing it's about him, but the Williams sisters, not the stars of their own movie, and this beatific, and as you said when we finished watching it, the Von Trapps, they're never upset. I was using the analogy of Little Women, but at least they fight and battle sometimes.
At least there's conflict. Those movies
feel way more real than this does.
Yeah, even though those girls are giving wonderfully natural performances, the best thing I can say about it, like you, is that it's a watchable movie. It wasn't boring.
It is too long, though. 2.5 hours almost?
It's too long, but I didn't feel like I was crawling out of my seat or anything. But it's ironic that it would be nominated for original screenplay when it runs the gamut of every great athlete biopic cliche. We never do more than scratch the surface of any of these people, including Richard, who seems to be motivated by strictly the desire to inject conflict into any otherwise straightforward story. Like you said, he's the least interesting person in the story. Will Smith was blessed with a nuclear arsenal of charisma, but he's not a good actor. The strains of effort on display here are painful to watch. He's a great actor when he's basically playing himself. When he's in his wheelhouse, he is wonderful. When he's trying to play a character, oh, it's just painful to watch.
You know what's interesting is that he has 4 nominations now, 2 this year because he produced this movie, but 3 for acting. All 3 times were real people. Muhammad Ali, Chris Gardner in The Pursuit of Happiness, and now here, Richard Williams. And yet, you're saying it. Men in Black type roles are better for him. Obviously, Independence Day, better for him.
Yes.
That's why he's a superstar, not because of stuff like this. And yet, he keeps on making, more often than not, stuff like this.
I think he just wants the Oscar, to be honest. He feels like he's chasing it.
He's probably getting it this year.
I can't be mad. I love Will Smith. But, ugh.
Okay, Licorice Pizza. Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Screenplay. So, PTA has the 3 nominations. I didn't say already. Branagh does for Belfast, and Campion does for Power of the Dog. So those 3 people all have 3 nominations. That's become a really standard thing. We've talked about that on other preview shows where somebody wrote, directed, and produced their own movie.
Now, if, like you said, they decided to widen up the cinematography category to include 10 movies, this movie would have almost definitely gotten a nomination, which would have made PTA a 4-time nominee because he was a cinematographer.
Right. Well, I like this guy a lot. Not so much the last 10 or so years of his movies. I'm a thumbs down on this. I didn't hate it or anything, but it felt like the central premise is flawed. That Alana Haim, a singer playing an actress, not that she's bad in the film, but this notion, I guess I'm stealing your lines here, but I agree with you, that she's supposed to be so wanted by everybody. It's, oh, we'll do anything for Alana Haim. Her character's name is Alana. No, you wouldn't. She's not that attractive in the first place.
She's just playing. It's fine. She doesn't have to be hot for the movie to make sense.
But the movie's saying she is.
But the movie keeps inserting these scenes and situations where people are like, wow, look at you. I'm a famous actor and I want to spend my evening with this young ingenue. No, you wouldn't. It makes sense that Gary, the lead guy, would have his head turned by her, but that's because he's also goofy looking. They're both these plain people who fall in love with each other, so why are we pretending that she's hot?
Cooper Hoffman is Philip Seymour Hoffman's son, of course. He hasn't acted a lot. I think they're both pretty good in the movie, but the central premise is flawed.
Well, the premise is not, she doesn't have to be hot. They could have just written the movie a little differently
here's the
and
other
made
problem.
Her what she is, which is average-looking person.
But here's the bigger
it's
problem.
It's not that much of a stretch that they would be attracted to one another.
At the end, though, when she says she's in love with him,
she's not.
I did not buy it. PTA has never been this much off the mark about something, I think, his entire career. And he's made some movies I haven't loved the last few years.
There's a great push and pull. She knows that she should not be encouraging him at all.
He's underage,
for one thing. Her ego is broken enough that the only positive attention that she gets in the world, she just can't turn it away. But the ending doesn't make sense. It's so deeply unearned and uncomfortable. I did love the look and the tone of this film.
And Bradley Cooper's extended cameo.
I didn't even love that. I didn't even think it was
fun,
that
though.
Great. I think it's just fun because it gave us the scene with the truck, which is probably, for people who've seen the film, know what I'm talking about. It's my favorite scene in the film. It just is a beautifully done little vignette. And a movie that has actually a lot of beautifully done little vignettes. But I am losing patience with Paul Thomas Anderson's complete disregard for narrative structure. Just give me a character arc. I am begging you. We can't live on cool images alone. We need a character we want to invest in a story with stakes that I can get into. This at least makes more sense than the aggressively nonsensical Inherent Vice, but I liked the main character of Inherent Vice. I didn't like Gary or Alana all that much. Couldn't root for them, didn't understand what I was supposed to be rooting for in the first place.
By the way, quick interjection, King Richard, one of the big things Chris said on the other podcast and live when we all saw it together. Who do you root for in that movie? The girls, okay, sure. But we're rooting for Richard?
He's
really
fighting against them more than he's working for them, or at least it's like half and half. He's a frustrating character. Meanwhile, you have Venus and Serena here. Those actresses are so wonderful. So why is the movie about him? But getting back to Licorice Pizza, it went beyond being like a Shaggy Dog story. Not against that. A loosely structured film is fine. This felt like it was loosely structured the way if you actually asked a teenager what their summer was like and they told you all their stories in whatever order they felt like and just kept going and going and going until you were bored and looking at your watch when they weren't looking. And in any sense that there could have been an order to that chaos, that you could have looked back and seen where the film was going, it is ruined by the ending. That stupid, unearned ending.
I agree.
But it did look great. There were some really cool images. And I wouldn't tell anybody not to see it, you know what I mean?
Especially if you like PTA, but He's not getting better as he gets older. It's unfortunate. Nightmare Alley, which we just saw 2 days ago. 4 nominations. So Best Picture, the cinematography, one of the many that's worthy this year. I'd love to see it win. The sets and the costumes. It probably should win all 3 of those. And it's one of my favorite of these nominees. I'm surprised how much I liked it because I saw the original. Edmund Goulding, who directed Grand Hotel. We covered that only a few weeks ago. And he also did the original Nightmare Alley, which I saw on YouTube, a pretty good print. This is based on a book. I guess they both are. Apparently, Guillermo del Toro based this movie more on the book, but I remember this being pretty loyal to the movie, so the original movie. So I knew basically where it was going, but I'm surprised how much I liked it considering all those factors. And Bradley Cooper is one of the best things of the whole year, and he wasn't nominated. We paid for it. We own it now through Prime because it was just going to be cheaper for us to do that than to go to some winky-dink theater downtown and pay to park. That would have been more expensive, actually. But I liked it quite a bit. What about you?
This one surprised me. I wasn't really expecting to like it. I didn't like The Shape of Water.
Neither did I.
And it is a somewhat messy film. It's trying to be a few too many things at once. It's just a little too busy. But I really enjoyed it. It's gorgeous. Unapologetically extra with all the sets and costumes. And we got to watch Cate Blanchett just fully vamping her ass off, which is always delightful. I did love his performance, but I was thinking about it afterwards. Is he a cad through and through? Is he trying to find his way, or is he just hopelessly broken? It never drew me all the way in, and I just couldn't figure him out. The ending is one of the best things about the film. There's this great epilogue.
He meets his destiny.
And I found it quite incredible and moving, his performance in that moment. But I wondered that it didn't feel to me at any point that that's exactly where he was leading to with his performance. Anyway, it's almost there. It's another good movie that in any other year probably would never make this list.
I'm surprised I got nominated for Best Picture when it only got 3 other technicals, actually, to be honest with you. Obviously, it's a period film. A lot of these are. This is pretty typical for the Oscars, but Belfast is a period film. King Richard's a period film. Licorice Pizza is obviously a period film. West Side Story is. Power of the Dog is. It's a Western as well, pseudo-Western, that Sam Elliott hates. Let's get into that. Power of the Dog, 12 nominations, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, all 4 actors. We'll talk about them individually in a few minutes here. The editing, the cinematography, the sets, the sound, and the music score. I saw this movie on Netflix before it was getting raved about. I liked it. I'll probably watch it again. And if it wins, we're going to cover it. Whatever wins Best Picture, we will cover probably May the 30th. It's a 3-star movie for me, for sure. Not quite 3.5 or 4. Although somebody I was talking with on Twitter last week was raving about it. So I will watch it through her eyes and try to see what she's seeing in it. I don't have a problem with it being nominated. I think it's probably worthy, especially compared to some of the other ones in this group. But it doesn't seem like the inevitable winner it did a few months ago.
If you were going to ask me which film on this list do I think deserves Best Picture the most, I think I might say Power of the Dog. It's between Power of the Dog and West Side Story for me. Another beautiful film. Like you, I liked it a lot. I can't put my finger on why it was I couldn't really get into it. It's probably going to win, and I can't be mad about it. Its frontrunner status is probably more owed to the fact that it was available on Netflix. I don't feel a great temptation to watch it again, but I also think that we will watch it again. And when I do, I wonder if it will open up to me in a different way because the ending changes the perspective of the entire film. Okay. And while I'm not dying to go back and watch it again, it has really made me want to go back and revisit The Piano so that I can immerse myself in top shelf Jane Campion.
Right, because she did that one too. Well, I just said West Side Story. And it did bomb in the theater, especially for a Spielberg film, although he hasn't been the blockbuster director he used to be the last 10 or 15 years anyway. But now it's on Disney Plus, so people can see it and have been seeing it. People on Twitter are raving about this and saying all these things, and then somebody else said, where were all you people when it was in the theater? When you go see it? Although that was the height of Omicron. So anyway, picture, director for Spielberg, supporting actress for Ariana DeBose, the cinematography, the sound, the sets, and the costumes. And I just said when we started the podcast, I would pick this, and I am surprised to report that, but I like the movie an awful lot. Ariana DeBose, I'll just talk about her for a second, and then we'll get into the supporting actress nominees soon, is pretty much an inevitability for that win. My only criticism of her performance is that whenever she's on screen, especially that very first time you see her, you can't take your eyes off of Ariana DeBose. So is she really a supporting actress when she's that? I don't just mean looks. She's just so dynamic. She was fun on SNL a couple of months ago. She's probably going to win, and she's maybe the best thing in the whole movie in the Rita Moreno role. Rita Moreno's got a pretty good role in this one, a different character, I think an invented character. Or is it Doc in the original?
It's just a gender switch, yeah.
Okay, right. I was surprised how much I liked it, again, considering I didn't love the original. Your thoughts?
Okay. I think this movie is the best display of just sheer craftsmanship this year, maybe in many years. Spielberg, he's the master of blocking. So watching him at work here makes you so sad that he had to wait this long to finally make a musical. He is so good at making musicals. It's my favorite Spielberg film I've seen in decades. And this is so much better than those stuffy, important movies he's been making lately, like The Post or Lincoln.
Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies.
And this is a lot better than In the Heights, by the way. Same year so released. Much better. That is not a good movie.
And I would say that it's better than the original. Not just because it's a technical masterpiece, but because he really managed to plumb the emotional beats of this story in a way I haven't seen before. And I'm really familiar with this story. I worked on the play when I was in high school. I stage managed the play. I've heard these songs a zillion times, and we covered the movie. It's not always easy to come back to material that you're just overly familiar with and really get a fresh view, but I got more out of this than I ever have before. From this or any version of Romeo and Juliet, I really felt it. The ending was so powerful to me. But musicals have to be a little bit irreverent. You're singing and dancing. Mm-hmm. You're being so silly. How can you not be a comic?
I've always said that's why I like Wizard of Oz, Singin' the Rain, and Hairspray. Probably my three favorite musicals. Because they're fun and funny.
You can be funny and deal with serious subject. My favorite musical is Hedwig. Incredibly serious subject matter that's also hysterically funny. And you're singing and dancing. It's just hard for me to take you too seriously if you take yourself too seriously.
Some details then about the producers of all these movies. Branagh, like I said, was nominated for his own movie. A couple of women are in there too. This has become more common the last 5 or 10 years. Women nominated for producing movies. Sometimes they're the only one or one of two, that kind of thing. Coda, you got three people I don't recognize at all, although Patrick Wachsberger has been working a long time in the industry. Don't Look Up, Adam McKay was nominated, so he's got 7 nominations, and of course he won for writing The Big Short many years ago. Drive My Car's producer is Terahisa Yamamoto. Dune's got a couple of different producers, including Mary Parent, a woman who worked on The Revenant. But Denis Villeneuve is nominated for producing and writing this movie, not directing, so he has 3 nominations in total now, because his directing nomination was for Arrival several years ago. Ken Richard, of course, Will Smith, we said already, and Tim and Trevor White are brothers who often work together. Licorice Pizza's PTA, another woman, Sarah Murphy, Adam Somner, who used to be an AD. There's an unusual thing where an assistant director becomes a producer. Nightmare Alley is, of course, Guillermo del Toro, his 5th nomination. And Bradley Cooper with his 9th nomination, and I think this is his 4th for producing. Joker was one of those, even though he's not in that, but he worked with Todd Phillips on that. He produced American Sniper, and he also produced his own A Star Is Born.
Love that movie.
Power of the Dog, Jane Campion, a couple of people involved in this, Canning and Sherman, won for The King's Speech. And then Spielberg and Christy McCosko-Krieger with their 3rd nomination, all with Spielberg, their producers on West Side Story. Okay, Best Director. We've mentioned them all because they're producers on their own movie, except for the Japanese guy, Ryusuke Hamaguchi. But we'll go with Anderson first, alphabetically. 11 nominations now in total. His 3rd for directing. He's got 3 nominations this year. And it's the second time he's had 3 in 1 year. He's never won before. I don't think he should win this time either. Kenneth Branagh's got 8 nominations now, 2nd time for directing, 3 nominations this year, has never won an Oscar, almost the exact same story as PTA. Jane Campion's got 5 nominations, 3 this year, 2nd time for directing, because she was nominated for directing The Piano, and 1 for writing that. Ryusuke Hamaguchi's got 2 nominations this year, because he also wrote the movie, his first 2 ever, and Spielberg has 19 now. I thought it was even more than that, but I see 19. 7th time for directing, 3 prior wins, 2 for directing, and this is the first time he's been nominated in a long time. Which is interesting, considering 7 nominations is among the short list of the most ever. It's not the most ever, but it's somewhere on that list. Lincoln, I think, was his last nomination 9 years ago.
He wasn't nominated for Bridge of Spies or The Post?
For producing them both.
For producing, okay.
Not for directing.
Yeah.
So PTA is decades past being due to win something, and maybe Branagh is too, but this is probably going to Campion. My pick is Spielberg, because I like his movie The Best of These, and I'm amazed he remade an acknowledged classic and made it better.
I think it's between Campion and Spielberg. Campion will probably get it.
Yeah, I agree.
Just because her film is better liked, more seen. I can't believe Branagh got a nomination for this. He can make a pretty picture, but I don't know if he could really make a tone of a film that resonated with people emotionally. Whereas Campion, you don't even see her doing it. She's like a magician. Mm-hmm. She can just create an image that goes straight to your subconscious, to your heart. Oh, she has such a gift. I don't love all of her films, but she is a real artist in a completely different way from the way that Spielberg is an artist.
Okay, Best Actress. Jessica Chastain, Olivia Colman, Penelope Cruz, Nicole Kidman, and Kristen Stewart alphabetically. This is the 3rd nomination for Chastain, her 2nd for Best Actress after Zero Dark Thirty, a movie you loved and I like a lot too. She won the SAG, so she's obviously the front runner. Olivia Colman, 3rd nomination for her, 2nd for Best Actress. She won for The Favorite not that long ago and was up for supporting for The Father last year, which was a great movie. She'd be worthy for sure. She's not going to win, though. Penelope Cruz, 4th nomination. That is hard to believe. Her 2nd for Best Actress. She won the supporting award for Vicky Cristina Barcelona many years ago for Woody Allen. Nicole Kidman, her fifth nomination, her fourth for Best Actress. She won for The Hours, 19 years before this movie, this performance in Being the Ricardos. A lot of real-life people here, too, actually. Kristen Stewart, of course, plays Princess Diana. Nicole Kidman plays Lucille Ball. I don't know if Penelope Cruz plays a real-life person. She's the only one of the major categories we've not seen. Parallel Mothers, Best Actress, we've not seen that movie. Chastain, of course, is playing Tammy Faye. But Kristen Stewart, first nomination for her ever, and a ferocious favorite on Twitter. She did a good job in a movie that has a terrible, self-pitying screenplay. And I took heat for that on Twitter a few weeks ago. I was complaining about it, but I stand by it. I think Jesus inspires less passion with evangelicals than Stewart does with her fans on Twitter. I think she's a solid actress, maybe an really good one. And so many people hate her so much for the Twilight films. I mentioned Dornan earlier, who's in Belfast. They hate him for the 50 Shades films. They both can act. They were just not good in those movies because they're not good screenplays and not well directed.
I love Kristen Stewart. I think she's a wonderful actress, but she really, more than most actors, needs to be cast properly. But I think she did a fine job, Spencer. It's such a disappointing movie. Go ahead and come after me too, but I did not like it.
Right. My heart would say Coleman, but she's not likely to win again already. I think she's quite good in that film, as is Jessie Buckley, the younger version of her.
Yes.
Rare situation where you've got two people nominated for playing the same character at different ages in the same year. It's happened in different years many times, but not usually in the same year. I think Iris is one of the few times that's ever happened. Kate Winslet and Judi Dench for playing Iris Murdoch, I think is her name, 20 years ago, as it turns out. Kidman is such a talented actress, but she brings next to nothing to Lucy in Being the Ricardos. When she plays Lucy as the comedy character, when we see the actual show being recorded, she comes pretty close to nailing the TV persona side of Lucy more than I would have thought she would. As good as she is, I didn't think she was well cast in that movie. But all the behind-the-scenes real-life stuff is just meh and disappointing and not all that good. Aaron Sorkin has made some good movies in his life. We didn't love Being the Ricardos. It wasn't terrible, but we didn't love it. And three nominations for that movie, because we're going to talk about Javier Bardem and J.K. Simmons, also nominated for that one movie. So Chastain has the inside track, and I'd be fine with her winning. But I don't know if she really gets into Tammy Faye's head that much. Although I like the movie, and Andrew Garfield far more than I was expecting to.
I would give it to Chastain if it was up to me. Coleman is a very close second. The only one here that would make me mad would be Nicole Kidman. You say it's not terrible. I think it's an objectively terrible mistake of a film and one of the worst performances I've seen Kidman give. Down there with Prom. She was also terrible in that movie. Yeah. And this is an actress I love. I think she is wonderful. Such a great talent. But good Lord, was she miscast in this film.
So you say Chastain's probably going to win and she's the one you would choose to win.
I don't know who would win. I cannot guess.
If you would have voted,
nobody saw Eyes of Tammy Faye. I would give it to Chastain. She's also just a great actress who's been making so many great films, so many great performances.
She's
it just
due.
Feels like she's due, right? And Coleman, she won her Oscar a few years ago for The Favorite. She got nominated for The Father. It just feels like she's been getting lots of her flowers. Maybe it's Chastain's turn right now.
Best Actor, Javier Bardem, Benedict Cumberbatch, Andrew Garfield, Will Smith, and Denzel Washington. By the way, Oscars So White is long in the past now because there are a lot of people in these categories that are not white people.
Because Hollywood's kind of caught up in a sense of actually greenlighting and making these films. You know, it was never going to get fixed overnight, but it's starting to feel like a real sea change has happened. Mm-hmm. It's a dent, but it still feels like at least real change.
Well, and DuBose is very worthy. She's going to win for all kinds of reasons, and maybe some of it's going to be, we got to make sure we get non-white people winning Oscars, but
whatever.
It's not like it's a token.
She earned it.
Oh, like, I'm saying
like
that.
Nobody's going to feel like she's an affirmative action win.
Some will.
Okay. Those people are racist or didn't see the movie.
So Bardem's got his fourth nomination, third for Best Actor. He won for Best Supporting Actor for No Country for Old Men. Outstanding role. Way better than this one. Playing a real person, by the way. Benedict Cumberbatch. Second nomination was also up for your favorite, The Imitation Game, where he played a real person, but this is not, I don't think, a real person. It's based on a book, so it's not a real person.
Movie.
Andrew Garfield is playing a real person. Larson, what's his name? Jonathan Larson, the guy who wrote Rent, which I hated, the movie anyway. And I think he's terrible in this. His second nomination is also up for Hacksaw Ridge. Will Smith, his fourth nomination, we said already, is third for Best Actor. This is his first nomination in 15 years, so it's been a long time. And Denzel Washington with his 10th nomination. He and Spielberg and Dench are some of the most rewarded with nominations in PTA, I guess, that are at this year's show. There's a lot of newbies, especially in the supporting categories, but not so much for people like Denzel. So 7th for Best Actor for Denzel. He's won twice before, Supporting Actor for Glory and the Lead Actor for Training Day. Bardem is fine, maybe even pretty good as Desi Arnaz. I think he's better than Kidman is as Lucy. But I wouldn't have thought he'd get awards recognition if we finished watching Being the Ricardos, or her, and certainly not Simmons either. Ben Batch is quite good in Power of the Dog. I'd be fine with him winning. And while Denzel's probably the best of these five, he's already won twice. it's not like he brings anything revolutionary to the Macbeth character. We've seen it played by a lot of people over the years. At least it's a black guy this time. And I was going to say, like, it should be. That's Othello. I've got the wrong movie, wrong play.
It's colorblind casting
right.
in that movie, yeah.
And you get two great actors, him and Frances McDormand and Joel Coen's film, so it's a little different and cool that way. I dislike Andrew Garfield in Tick, Tick, Boom, and especially a movie called Mainstream, which is on Netflix. Mainstream is why I really disliked him, because I know it's not the same movie, and that's not entirely fair. But I disliked him so much in Mainstream, and I didn't love him in Tick, Tick, Boom either. And even in Spider-Man No Way Home, which I just watched yesterday, he's a little bit annoying in that, too. And I think everybody involved in that movie, especially the actors, think that some of their little multiple Spider-Mans thing is cleverer and funnier than it actually is. But I'm rooting against him. He's fifth. He's minus five for me. It reminds me, I think it was Billy Wilder that said, "Don't just do something. Stand there. Stop fidgeting and twitching all the time." And I know some people would say, that's what the character is. He's not an untalented actor, but this past year's slate of movies for him, Dan Merle, loved him. Oh, I hated him in that movie, but it was more so another movie. I know. Fine. The trophy's likely going to Will Smith, but I think Nicolas Cage in Pig and Bradley Cooper in Nightmare Alley are better than all of these guys.
Usually this is the most competitive category of the night, but I think this year it's just a dog's breakfast. Benedict Cumberbatch is the only actor who deserves to win, even deserves to be on this list this year, in my opinion. Maybe Denzel Washington, but he really got outshined by the supporting cast in that movie. Mm-hmm. That movie proved to me you can be a great film actor. Frances McDormand, one of my favorite actresses of all time. But Shakespeare's hard. What can I say?
She doesn't really do that much with a famous character like Lady Macbeth either.
No.
She do more with it than she does.
Yeah. It is just disappointing. And the actual Shakespearean actors who do Shakespeare on stage were just running circles around them to the extent that I wish they had simply cast Shakespearean actors in the entire film and maybe it would have been a better movie. And it's not like very many people saw it anyway, even though they cast big stars in the main parts. What a beautiful film. I really loved it. And much like West Side Story, it gave me a fresh perspective on an old story that gutted me.
So I assume you agree with me that Will Smith is likely to win.
Unfortunately.
But you don't want him to.
No, I really don't, but whatever.
So you'd say Ben Batch.
Ben Batch. He would be my choice. And that's all I have to say.
Okay. Best Supporting Actress, Jessie Buckley in The Lost Daughter. If I haven't been saying all these titles, I assume people know who the actors and actresses are and producers and directors, what they're working with. Ariana DeBose in West Side Story, Judi Dench in Belfast, Kirsten Dunst in Power of the Dog, and Anjanue Ellis, a favorite of ours for that name alone, in King Richard.
Ellis is represented.
Buckley's got her first nomination here, playing the younger version of the Olivia Colman character. And she's a bit of a surprise, but I'm glad she's in this group. I think she's worthy enough anyway. DeBose is going to win. It's just her sixth movie overall. She has the most buzz, though, and she's winning every award, much like Troy Kotsur in the supporting actor category. So she'll win. It's her first nomination, though, ever. Dench is the only one of these four that's ever been at the show before as a nominee. This is the eighth time, her third for supporting actress, and she won for Shakespeare in Love. Dunst, one of our favorites, at least one of my favorites. We've covered a lot of her movies in the last 4 or 5 years. This is her first ever nomination. She's fine, but this, really? And then Ellis. Funny thing is, again, I'll refer to King Richard, the podcast. If people listen to that, they'll hear this story twice. But we paused, the three of us, because Chris watched it with us, King Richard. And I told you guys that she was nominated. And you both said, "For what?" And then I said, "I bet she has a big argument with him. Big fight scene and she's going to cry." The very next scene was when that happened. I didn't know that. I just got lucky and guessed right. So anyway, my heart says Dunst. More for a career achievement, I guess, even though she's not that old yet. But DeBose has taken this. But again, she's not a supporting actress. She doesn't support anybody. She's a star.
She's the closest thing to a lock this year. And she should win it, and she will win it. If she wants to be, she'll be an A-list star. Jessie Buckley and Anjanue Ellis, they gave beautiful performances. Anjanue Ellis, a reactress. A great word that was coined by this Slate reviewer. A reactress, an actress that is just there to react to the main character doing ridiculous things, push against them, and give the emotions that he can't give because he's a man. And they always have that one scene where they have this big dramatic speech, and it's like a climax of the film. And like you said, she had that big dramatic speech, and she was very good. But
we're never going to watch the movie again, but if we did, I would definitely pay very close attention to what she's doing with her face when she's not speaking, because I bet it's a lot better than I even realized.
Jessie Buckley, her nomination, it's like the promise of a great career to come. I think she's a really talented actress. She's starting to really come out and get these interesting parts and get noticed. Judi Dench, give me a break. I don't know what she's doing on this list. Mm-hmm. And like you, Kirsten Dunst, I'm so happy that she's coming around again. She's really getting recognized. She's having a bit of a renaissance. And people really fight for her. She has not quite Kirsten Dunst level fans, but she's definitely got fans.
Kristen Stewart.
Sorry, Kristen Stewart. Yeah, thank you.
We know who her date's going to be because her husband's nominated too, Jesse Plemons.
I know.
Sorry, not husband. They're not actually married. I looked it up.
There's one other time it's happened in history, right?
Well, Pitt and Jolie were both nominated in 2008.
Oh, there you go.
But they weren't married yet at that point.
I really love her as an actress. I just don't want to see her win for this performance. It's a movie that's all about restraint, and she lays it on kind of thick. She's bad at playing a drunk. I wouldn't say she was miscast, but I didn't love her as much as everybody else did in this movie.
Okay, best supporting actor. Ciaran Hinds, I think I'm saying it right. Troy Kotsur, Jesse Plemons, J.K. Simmons, and Cody Smith-McPhee. I don't love this category either, even though I do like it more than best actor. And only one person's a repeat nominee, J.K. Simmons. This is the second nomination for him. He won for the great Whiplash movie. Of course, I love that. I thought he had been nominated before, but no, it's just that other time. He's nothing special in this. I don't know what he's doing here. Hinds has been working for 40 years. I already said it before. I think Dornan in the same movie is better than he is. Troy Kotsur is winning everything. He's only been in 5 movies. Actually a deaf man. Interesting thing about Coda is that several years ago, well, Marley Matlin, maybe you'd cast her because she's already a movie star, but the other two, the father, Kotsur, and the one who plays the son, would probably not be deaf people. But this is what ableist, is that what the word is? Casting or colorblind casting, we'd say if it was a black role that they got some white person to play. Anyway, whatever you call that, where you get people that actually are the thing to be in the movie, even though they're not a famous person. And now he's winning every award anyway, so look at the reward they got for casting somebody. And he's very good. I think he represents the whole cast more than himself, if he does win, and when he probably does win. Not that he's not worthy, but in a way it's a cast Oscar for one person, I would say. Plemons does such great work on TV and in some movies. He should have been up for Game Night several years ago. One
yes!
of the best scene-stealing performances in any comedy or any movie ever. And he's fine in Power of the Dog, but I wouldn't say he's necessarily award-worthy. Cody Smith-McPhee, same movie. Great in The Road with Viggo many years ago. Probably better than that when he was a younger actor as a kid. I have no problem with him being nominated, but I wouldn't pick him exactly.
So this is another tough category. I would probably give it to Ciaran Hinds for his career of incredible, unappreciated character acting. Jesse Plemons, I don't see what people saw in this performance. I think it's more of a case of good casting than good performance. He's a fine actor, but it's not like this was a stretch for him. And the more I see of him, and I really like him a lot, I don't know if he has range. J.K. Simmons, fuck this nomination. Love him, but he got his Oscar for exactly the right performance already, and he phoned this movie in. He wasn't good in it. Or he was good in the sense that you like J.K. Simmons, you like seeing him in a movie, great. But it's not like he was bothering to do an impersonation or, God, it was such a bad movie. Cody Smith-McPhee, his character is such a black box in this film. It's hard to evaluate his performance. I really like him. He might be my front runner in the sense that he probably gave a better performance than Ciaran Hinds, but he's never going to win. Troy Kotsur, he was fine. I didn't think he was that great. I don't think it was a very challenging part. The movie is just one big long cliche. I don't think any of the performances in that film deserve the credit they're getting. He's not an incredible actor just because he acted while deaf.
Well, then this might be what people will say about, say, DeBose winning or some of the... There have been a lot of Best Supporting Actress winners in the last 10 or 15 years that are black. And I'm not saying they weren't worthy, but I guarantee you there are people out there who will say that they won so that the Academy doesn't look like they're completely racist with a lesser award, like a supporting award.
So maybe that's what I sound like right now?
Well, that's maybe what people would say about Kotsur as a deaf person.
That's literally what I'm saying. I don't think he would be nominated if he wasn't also performing in sign language. The chemistry he has with Marley Matlin, the two of them together are absolutely delightful.
Them playing a Randy older couple, even though she doesn't look old at all. Yeah, she does look better now. I happened to catch her win when she won for Children of a Lesser God as a 20-something-year-old, whatever she was. She's cute back then. She's a babe now. She looks better, I would say, 30, whatever that is, years later, 35 years later, than she did back then. Okay, the scripts. I've mentioned a lot of these names already because almost everybody here directed their own movie. Branagh wrote Belfast by himself. This is original screenplay, by the way. Don't Look Up, Adam McKay and David Sirota. King Richard, Zach Bailyn, his first ever screenplay. Licorice Pizza, PTA. And The Worst Person in the World, the other major nomination of the 8 categories, the 4 acting, the 2 writing, picture and director, that we haven't seen along with Parallel Mothers. The Worst Person in the World. Joachim Trier and Eskil Vogt. V-O-G-T. There's a baseball player named Stephen Vogt, so it's probably Vogt. I don't like this category at all.
Oh, it's bad. It's terrible.
We haven't seen Worst Person in the World yet, so we can't comment on that. Belfast and Don't Look Up, you won't agree with that part probably, are not the least bit original. Maybe more so Don't Look Up. But Belfast certainly isn't. I've been complaining about that for years, though. The best original screenplay when movies aren't original, even if they have great dialogue or something like that.
And well, since, they're just not based on another property.
I know, but I just take issue.
Fine, that's just semantics.
And since PTA isn't likely going to win for directing, it would be appropriate if he finally got to go up on stage for writing, although his script was not one of the five best original screenplays of this or any other year.
Not like this. I want him to win, but not like this.
So of these five, then, I guess I'll root for the movie I haven't even seen because none of the rest of them are really all that worthy.
I'll root for Don't Look Up, which is never going to win, because I did love that movie. The rest, other than the one I haven't seen, please, no.
What do you think's going to win?
I don't even know. I couldn't even guess.
Okay, best adapted screenplay. Coda, Sean Hader wrote that by herself, just her second movie that she's written and directed. Drive My Car by the director Ryusuke Hamaguchi and Takamasa Oe, or O, it's O-E, I don't know how you pronounce that. Dune, Eric Roth, his seventh nomination, John Spates, and Denis Villeneuve. The Lost Daughter, so you got three nominations for what was a pretty good movie that's
and
on Netflix.
I've read the book, so I can directly compare it to the source material.
So Buckley Coleman and their director, Maggie Gyllenhaal, her first movie ever writing or directing.
Incredible debut.
Her second nomination, because she was nominated for Supporting Actress for Crazy Heart. But the three of them will be at the show together, and The Power of the Dog, Jane Campion, who won for writing the piano nearly 30 years ago. I like this five some a lot more than the five in the original category. At least you've got three women amongst these nominees, though, unlike the original category, which is all guys. And wouldn't it be the tits if Maggie Gyllenhaal won an Oscar for her first ever screenplay and before her brother wins one? And The Lost Daughter, by the way, is a pretty good screenplay, so if it wins, I'd be okay with that. But I guess I like Coda the best of these five, so Sean Hader, although Campion probably has inside track.
Power of the Dog is probably going to win. I might give it to Drive My Car. I know it has that problem in the middle, but that feels like something they should have fixed in the edit suite, not in the screenplay level. It is a beautiful screenplay with just some outstanding language and restraint. So that would be my pick. It's never going to win.
Dune's a surprising inclusion, actually, because sci-fi movies are not usually nominated for the screenplays.
People love Dune. It's just one of those properties that people have this reverence for, even though it seems so overwhelmingly dense and boring to me. But I guess it's like a masterpiece of world building.
It's also the first movie we saw since the pandemic started. The last one we saw in the theater was The Invisible Man, a couple days before the lockdown started in March 2020.
Probably shouldn't have gone to the theaters, but we did.
Yeah. And then this was, I think, back in October last year. That long between theater experiences. Okay, some other categories. Cinematography, Bruno Del Bonal, who shot Tragedy of Macbeth for Joel Coen, his sixth nomination. And Janusz Kaminski, seven nominations overall. He won for Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan. And, of course, works with Spielberg here in West Side Story. And as we've already said, there are probably 20 more movies that could have been in this category, too. I don't know what's going to win. I just want to mention Del Bonal and Kaminski, longtime veterans with more nominations. Kaminski probably won't win again. But interesting that his two previous wins are for a black and white movie, and then a movie that had the color sucked out of it. And this is one of the most colorful movies Spielberg's ever made, if not the most colorful movie he's ever made, including having so many people of color in it.
I hate him. This is a preference thing, but he drives me
crazy.
You hate
his work.
I hate his work. Yes, sorry. I hate his work. He drives me crazy with the overkill and the lens flares and the glow.
Well, the Bridge of Spies thing.
Yeah, but it worked better in this film than it worked in something like The Post and The Bridge of Spies. It felt a little more appropriate in this film, but I still didn't love the look of this. Well, maybe because there's so many gorgeous films this year.
Dune certainly has a shot at winning it, too.
That would be my pick.
I didn't say, but Dune, Power of the Dog, and Nightmare Alley are the other three nominees up against those guys. I think I might pick Nightmare Alley. So Dan Laustsen.
I would put Tragedy of Macbeth right up there, too.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I just love the look of that film.
And Del Bonal is probably due to win. Music score includes Hans Zimmer, his 12th nomination. He's won before for Lion King. And he probably wrote a good score for Dune, but the IMAX theater blew out my ear, so I have no idea if it sounded good or not.
Come on.
And maybe Johnny Greenwood should win for The Power of the Dog, partly for doing such great work for PTA in the past, especially There Will Be Blood.
The thing I like best about the Johnny Greenwood score on that film is it really is unexpected. It's not a Western score.
As Sam Elliott would say, it ain't a Western either.
Well, Sam Elliott doesn't have to like that movie. That's fine.
That man has never trended on Twitter or anything in his life, as much as he's basically liked. Not so liked anymore these days.
Whatever. And everybody loves him so much. This is going to blow over in no time.
Okay, I mentioned there are some superstars nominated for Best Song, including Beyonce, Van Morrison, Billie Eilish. She wrote the music for No Time to Die. Lin-Manuel Miranda for an Encanto song. And much like Andrew Garfield, and he did direct him in Tick, Tick, Boom, apart from Hamilton, which was excellent, we got to watch that again one of these days, I don't think I like him. I don't think I've liked anything else he's done. I hated In the Heights, didn't like Tick, Tick, Boom. Some of the songs he's written for other things, fine, but I think he's overexposed and I'm a little tired of him.
I think you don't like theater kids. You don't like him, and Andrew Garfield is the same. They're both over-the-top theater kids, and they rub you the wrong way.
And that star power, more than most of the actors, that star power, they're up against Diane Warren. She's been nominated yet again. She's never won, so maybe it's time to get her up on the stage. She's nominated for a movie called Four Good Days, which I don't think anybody has seen, so she's probably not going to win. I could see Beyonce winning. Maybe she deserves to, but Bond movies do win the Best Song Award a lot in the last few years. Flea is the first time a movie is up for Best Documentary, Best Animated Film, and Best International Film. We saw that within the last few weeks as well. Not a fun experience, but a good movie. International Film is undoubtedly going to Drive My Car. Animated, probably be Encanto, I don't know. I wish Mitchells and the Machines would win Best Animated Film, actually. That's my favorite of those five nominees, although Flea is very good. There are always honorary awards, and there are four this year. Elaine May, Liv Ullmann, Samuel L. Jackson, they're all getting honorary awards, and Danny Glover is getting the Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award. It's been true for years that honorary winners get their moment months before at a banquet. I assume it happened this time, too. Then we see a brief snippet of that and maybe hear them say two or three words, maybe, during the actual Oscars broadcast. It's hard to believe that Ullman and Jackson, and even Glover and May, for that matter, have never won before, and very few nominations for them, for that matter. Jackson only had one time for Pulp Fiction. So the best thing for the show to do is spend 19 seconds honoring them total, because that's probably what it's going to do. If they want to cut out of the other categories, and we'll talk about that in a second, then they're sure not going to show much of these legends that people would want to see. Who doesn't want to see Sam Jackson give a speech at the Oscars?
I have never understood their logic behind this decision.
Apparently it's ABC that told the Oscar executives they want the show to be shorter. And I don't know if this is going to change. A lot of people with some power have been criticizing this, including Del Toro and Spielberg and others. But they don't want eight categories presented live. Some of them, I've said before, does anybody really care about animated short, documentary short, even best documentary, and maybe even animated film? Just but music score, cinematography, and editing, they don't want those on the show? Really?
Cinematography is still on the show. I don't think cinematography got cut.
Okay, but music score, I think I said this online a few months ago, one of the first, or whatever, weeks ago when this came up. Sometimes the composers are bigger names than some of the actors are. When John Williams is one of the candidates, or Jerry Goldsmith back in the day when he was still alive, or Hans Zimmer. These are major names. People that know movies know these people.
For all the ways that everybody complains about the Oscars and thinks they should be like other award shows, it still gets higher ratings than all of those other award shows. So they must be doing something right. I know the show is flawed. I know they have to fix something. And I'm going to say something that might be surprising because I am an editor. But I am not mad that they cut the editing category from the main broadcast. Because as an editor, I love to cut for time. I think that everything can be shorter. I'm not mad that they're cutting these categories. Twitter had a lot to say about this, and a lot of people are very outraged about it. But I'm like, really? You don't go to the bathroom when they're announcing Best Editor? And if they just give people access to these acceptance speeches some other way, put it online, broadcast it earlier or in a separate show, make sure people can watch it if they want, but it doesn't have to be part of the main broadcast, then honest to God, what are you complaining about? Oh, they don't get their moment in the sun? Well, neither do most people. Most people don't get to go and collect an Oscar on stage. What do you want? It's a television show.
Still pretty insulting, though, that they've had these categories for decades now. No, we don't have them anymore. Whoopi Goldberg said it many years ago. It's the Oscars. It's once a year. If it's a four-hour show, people watch sports for 4 hours if they like the game enough. They'll watch it for 5 or 6 hours.
People complain about it being long every year.
That would be baseball. No football game goes that long, granted. Basketball and hockey, I don't think reasonably could ever go that long. But you get my point. They will watch sports. People watch football all day long on Sunday. You're not getting those old viewers back. You're getting the old viewers. You're not getting that big amount of people back.
That's it right there.
The Titanic year. It's not going to happen.
Times have changed. You're never going to get 1997 numbers again. Or I guess it was 98. Just cater to the people who already love it. It is for film lovers. Make it for film lovers.
And if you want this to work, get rid of the montages. Jon Stewart said when he hosted one year, we have a salute to montages.
He really nailed it. It was really funny. He did a montage to scenes seen through binoculars or scenes of people waking up startled.
No. So it's funny, but unnecessary. And if you're going to have a host or hosts, as they do with stand-up comics this year, don't let them drone on for 8 to 10 minutes. We don't need an entire monologue. If they want to do a stand-up act, go to a nightclub.
But the monologue is often the most entertaining part of the show. I don't understand this either, where they're like, stop wasting time with funny people telling jokes that make everybody laugh. I guess we're going to disagree about what we think should make the cut and what shouldn't.
I think we always agree that the way they present the awards is so bad, too. Some of these great actors that sound like they've never read anything off a screenplay before.
Movies are excellent.
It's like they have to read a teleprompter, but they all forgot to bring their glasses.
Look how bad Joaquin Phoenix was last year presenting Best Actor to Anthony Hopkins. He wasn't even there, of course.
Sir, this is what you do for a living.
One of the great actors
of his
generation.
You have won awards doing this. How come you can't read three sentences?
Well, the biggest thing then was him saying, I don't know what acting is, so here's some people that did it. That's pretty much what he said when he was up there last year.
Yeah, try harder, sir. Or just say you don't want to do it.
Okay, at the end of the podcast, we'll talk about our faves of 2021. I'll cheap out and list them alphabetically because I couldn't pick one I liked the most, really. So I'm going to go Coda, Dune, Finch, which is on Apple Plus also. Really drew me in. Hanks and a robot and a dog, and is that it, pretty much? The Green Knight, The Lost Daughter, Nightmare Alley, Pig, Riders of Justice, which you got to see, The Tragedy of Macbeth, and West Side Story. If I had to pick one fave from all these, I'd probably go with Riders of Justice, which gets better as it goes along. Special mention to Spider-Man No Way Home. Far from perfect, but I did have a good time with it. Also, the Snyder Cut of Justice League was 2021. I meant to watch that in stages. Saw it all in one night. Way better than the theatrical cut of Justice League. And also, kudos to The Harder They Fall. Mostly because it was cool as shit to see all these excellent black actors, and it had that really surprising emotional moment at the end. And of course, we have to exclude 2021 releases like Minari, Nomadland, The Father, and Judas and the Black Messiah, because they were part of last year's Oscars. But they are technically 2021 movies, so if I could include those in my top 10, they'd all probably be, if not 1, 2, 3, 4, well, Minari, Nomadland, and The Father would probably be, but they don't count, because they were technically last year, this weird Oscar year. You got 2020 plus whatever it was, 3 months last year. Your favorites from last year.
I didn't really have many.
All right.
It was just such a bleak year. I'll just shout out one movie that won the Palme d'Or and didn't get any love from the Oscars. Was not a perfect film, but I found it so radical in many ways, and that was Tutane.
I have not watched it yet. I will, though.
I think I've been bugging you to watch it.
I will see it. I haven't yet. And again, we'll post a chat about whichever movie does win Best Picture later this year, probably in the May 30th slot of 2022. In 7 days, we'll get back to talking about Best Picture winners from long ago as we analyze Ray Milan tipping a few and Billy Wilder's The Lost Weekend. We watched Lost Highway not that long ago, now The Lost Weekend. The coming attractions trivia question for The Lost Weekend. What was the last movie we covered that was directed by the great Billy Wilder?
All right, so for the answer to that, please tune in to next week's podcast about The Lost Weekend. If you want to find us, we're both on Twitter. I'm at Bev Ellis. Ellis Ryan is at MovieFiend51. You can also reach us by email, top100projectpodcast@gmail.com. And to enjoy freshly roasted premium coffee delivered straight to you in Canada or the US, please go to sparkplugcoffee.com and use the promo code TOP100PROJECT. That's all one word, TOP100PROJECT is not case sensitive, and that will get you a 20% discount.
We will probably do an Oscars post view like we usually do the day after, so March the 28th it would go up, probably later at night, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. Other than that, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
And cut.